Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka, where it's 40 degrees under overcast skies. Today is Monday, October 31st, Halloween 2011. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Scientists and fishermen are following news of a deadly fish virus found in British Columbia salmon. It's a scary situation, but it may not be as bad as it sounds, at least for now, and it's not a threat to people who eat salmon. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Infectious salmon anemia has badly damaged populations of farmed Atlantic salmon. So when scientists found the virus in a pair of wild Pacific sockeyes, they were worried. Should they be?
It's not a time to panic or overreact. I think some folks have been a little bit overly concerned about it.
That's Ted Myers, chief pathologist for Alaska's Department of Fish and Game. If confirmed, he says the virus found in two central British Columbia fish needs to be watched and understood. That's because it's a deadly disease that affects the blood and internal organs of salmon.
Basically, they develop an anemia and they hemorrhage. And, it can kill market-sized fish.
The virus has badly damaged captive Atlantic stocks in Chile, Norway, Scotland, and eastern Canada. Pacific salmon are different, and Myers says several thousand earlier tests by the British Columbia government showed no presence in wild fish. But he warns this disease adapts.
It's possible that some of these viruses could mutate to potentially infect Pacific salmon, but that would probably occur under situations where there's a selective pressure, like a hatchery situation or a pen farming situation or something of that nature.
That's what happened to farmed Pacific cohos in Chile in the late 1990s. Infectious salmon anemia spread quickly through cohos raised in net pens along with Atlantic salmon and rainbow trout.
We shouldn't underestimate the power of viruses.
Dale Kelly heads up the Alaska Trollers Association. The Juneau-based group is among commercial fishing organizations that want action.
It's a pretty scary situation for us all, and we want to put it in context. But we would just really like to continue to urge the Canadians and other fisheries professionals to, make sure that they're doing as much as fast as they can.
Some politicians agree. Alaska Senators Lisa Murkowski and Mark Begich have joined Washington Senator Maria Cantwell to ask Congress to require U.S. agencies to become involved. They want an emergency research effort to calculate how much of a threat the virus may pose. Canadian officials have stepped up their interest, but they say they will decide on an action plan after they confirm identification of the virus. Kelly says the initial diagnosis came from a lab that specializes in infectious salmon anemia, so she asks, why wait?
What we've seen out of Canada is a press release that says, if our tests a few weeks down the road come up with a finding of ISA, then we'll bring people together and then we'll talk about what to do. And it seems like there is probably some information they could be gathering up, before winter hardens everything up, to at least get them a boost on sorting out the extent of the problem.
Those concerned assume the virus came from Atlantic salmon in British Columbia fish farms. It appears to be the same European strain found in Norway and Scotland. The fear is close quarters could quickly spread the illness, which could further spread it to wild stocks. Those fish could then carry the disease up the coast into southeast and other Alaska waters. Other pathogens attack Pacific salmon, and some are widespread. One, known as the IHN virus, also causes hemorrhaging and organ failure. State pathologist Ted Myers says it's common in Alaska sockeyes. It's adapted to live in Chinook, Chums, and Steelhead down south, but in this state, it hasn't crossed those boundaries.
We're always concerned about this virus potentially mutating and being able to infect other species, but so far our hatchery programs have been following what we call, we have a sockeye salmon culture procedure, which really mitigates or reduces the risk from this virus.
He says the hatchery procedure has been in place for close to 30 years, and it's been successful. The salmon viruses pose no threat to people, but some fisheries advocates worry consumers won't understand that, and word of the latest problem could hurt salmon sales. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Tenneke Springs is a community surrounded by science, where residents joke about whale song waking them up on their boats in the middle of the night, and huge old-growth woods are just steps away. And teachers at Tenneke School hope that a new way of learning science will better connect their students to what amounts to a giant outdoor laboratory surrounding their school. KCAW's Ed Ronco tagged along as they got their feet wet.
As seventh grader Quinn Keel watches the clock.
On your mark, get set. Go.
Thank you. One of his classmates, Rune Morrison Morrow, reaches into the water with long gloves.
I'm rubbing the rocks.
Why?
To get the bugs off.
And what's going to happen to the bugs?
We're going to look at them.
All right, thanks.
We're standing in the Indian River near Tenneke Springs. The students, nine of them from the Tenneke School, are participating in a stream team field exercise. The bugs from the rocks will drift into a net that another student holds just downstream. Morrison Morrow has to agitate the rocks for 3 minutes, which is a very long time when you're stooped over in the middle of a river.
How much longer, Quinn?
Her classmates watch from the riverbank.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Stop.
Bing, 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 bing.
Very carefully lift the net up so nothing falls out.
The net comes out of the water, and after gathering bugs from a few different places in the river, the students move up the bank to a nearby shelter. The net is emptied into metal trays, and then the students use pipettes to look for the bugs in the debris.
Oh, wicked, I got a two-in-one deal.
Today's lesson in the woods is a bit more complicated than just looking at bugs. The students have been taught about the different types of stream bugs, or benthic macroinvertebrates, if you want to get scientific about it. But more importantly, they're learning about how the abundance and diversity of stream bugs, the amount and the different kinds, can indicate whether the stream is healthy. And the health of the stream is important for salmon, which are also important.
Most of us eat salmon. Salmon's a big part of the economy. I think one out of every 10 jobs in Southeast is directly related to salmon. So salmon's a pretty big deal here.
That's Scott Harris with the Sitka Conservation Society.
I am the Restoration and Special Projects Coordinator.
And this special project is to help schools across Southeast Alaska better teach their students about the importance of salmon and their habitats.
You know, as kids are hearing this radio interview, if they are, they're probably rolling their eyes going, oh my God, more salmon. Because they get a lot of salmon in their curriculum. But the difference with this is what it takes is things they're already learning, basic principles of ecology, linking it to something that they're familiar with in their everyday lives and in their communities, and then taking it to the field.
This curriculum has been in use in Sitka for about 5 years. A group of teachers worked with the Conservation Society and built lessons for all grade levels, dealing with a variety of science concepts that meet state standards and expectations. But the stream team activity, what we're doing now and sort of the basis for it all, was developed by Blatchley Middle School science teacher Brenda Pepoy and Robert Miller, a fisheries biologist with the U.S. Forest Service. Let's go back to the river, where another group of students is measuring the dissolved oxygen in the water. Not far away is Ken Merrill, an instructional aide at the school, who teaches science in the afternoons. He says there's a lot of science around the students every day.
Everything is right here. Tenneke Inlet's a very productive inlet for everything Southeast has.
But he also says the stream team lesson and the related curriculum will help him better engage his students.
They just have more interest, because in the classroom they would have been bored after 20 minutes. But you can see we're going on 3 hours now and they're still excited.
So. And frankly, so is he. Merrill is side by side with his students as they go looking for bugs. He helps the younger ones search, and he talks to the older ones about what they're finding. And he's watching as the students start to understand the different kinds of bugs and why they're important. He says it's rewarding as an instructor to see that moment when a student starts to catch on.
Oh yeah, you can see it. Whenever, every once in a while I'll just bring up a subject, trying to get it across, and all of a sudden it's like, yeah, you can tell when the light bulb clicks.
Harris says there are scientific ways to know if the curriculum is working too.
Well, we've actually measured it.
They've done before and after tests, but also the students put together presentations at the end of the school year. Harris says they show strong retention of the material, owing in part to their hands-on experience. To date, the Conservation Society and the Forest Service have trained 21 teachers who have shared the lessons with approximately 650 students across Southeast Alaska.
Hoonah, Cake, Angoon, Tenneke, and Ketchikan We're going to go to Prince of Wales, the communities on Prince of Wales and Craig and Klawock next year.
And Harris says the lessons can be used outside the region too, and that he hopes to share it with teachers statewide.
And it doesn't even have to be salmon. It's really a lot about water quality and healthy habitat for fish.
Back in Tenneke Springs, we've wrapped up at the river and we're hiking into town. Along the way, 7th grader Rune Morrison Morrow, the rock agitator from the beginning of the story, says that she enjoyed the day and that she learned a lot.
Without the bugs, there wouldn't be any fish. Without the fish, there wouldn't be any food.
And now she knows about dissolved oxygen and other things like that and thinks that maybe science would be fun as a job.
So they're not really good with cold and rain. So
maybe if you could count bugs in the tropics somewhere.
Yeah. Then it'd be okay.
Reporting in Tenneke Springs, I'm Ed Ronco.
A federal appeals court has affirmed an earlier court ruling that the logjam timber sale on Prince of Wales Island can move forward. The 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals rejected an appeal by the Tongass Conservation Society. The sale would allow the harvesting of over 3,000 acres of mostly old-growth forest and the construction of 22 miles of road in the Tongass National Forest. Appeals court judges said in their decision last Thursday that the conservation organization had failed to show that the U.S. Forest Service's environmental review of the sale was seriously flawed. A spokesman for the Conservation Society says it's unlikely to appeal further. Viking Lumber Company had pursued the sale, and state officials say it was necessary for the company's survival. Sun weather forecast today for Sitka and PA calls for cloudy skies, scattered rain showers, highs around 48. West winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow, very windy, rain heavy at times, highs around 48. South winds to 35 miles per hour with gusts to around 60 miles per hour possible. This is KCAW in Sitka.